This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 257 for Wednesday, January 10th, 2018. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Coming in first of the new year, Mr. Lou Page of Zombies Ate My Podcast. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you for having me.
I read that entire intro thinking, 257? Question mark? Did I change that? Is that the right one? And I think I did. I think I did it in the doc. I think it's the correct. It's the problem when I am prepared and I make the show notes on like Monday. Mm-hmm. And like normally it's like 10 minutes before the show and I'm like, all right, what show is it? Right. Okay. So we'll just do this and you get everything.
The email I got said 257. So
right, yeah, but like the email that you got would have been from the notes and that's fine. But like, did I not change the number on the doc is the question. So while
you did.
I did. You did. So yeah. So 256 was the last Jedi. Okay. So I'm correct. It's almost as bad as getting the date wrong, the year, you know, that switch over from the new year where everybody writes 2017 on everything for like 3 weeks. I don't write it wrong. I type it incorrectly.
Well, the last time we did this, I was the one that started the notes and I almost put the date intentionally wrong to see if you'd do anything, but I'm glad I didn't.
I'm usually pretty good. Because of my schedule of working from home, and when you do the kinds of things that I do, you have to keep a pretty routine schedule. Otherwise, you get nothing done. And I'm still quite capable of getting nothing done, even though I'm organized. But I will at least know the day of the week because of podcasts and because of deadlines and things like that. And usually it's more financial deadlines. Like, when am I getting paid and when do I have to pay bills? So I generally know the date. So if something is in there in the notes and it's incorrect, then it's like, that doesn't seem right to me. The other thing that was throwing me earlier in the fall was there was a bit there where we were flipping and flopping with people's schedules and I wasn't always recording on Wednesday.
Ooh.
So then you'd be like, is it Tuesday? Is it Monday? Like, which day am I recording? And like all that kind of stuff kind of creeps up in there. So, but it's been almost a month. I think we took at least 3 weeks off over the holidays. We were going to record last week, but we decided to push it another week just because it was just too soon after the holiday. I think people were still kind of getting back into the swing of things.
Yeah, we're on the same kind of schedule with Zamp. We were going to take a holiday break and come back after the new year. But all of us have pretty much come down with the flu after Christmas vacation, and we're all in various states of recovery.
Yeah. I, thankfully, knock on wood, have not been sick this year with a flu yet. I'm feeling a little froggy right now, but it's not the flu. It's because it's been the kind of shut in winter around here where I'm doing a lot of work, which means I haven't been talking to anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, my mother is a texter now, so she doesn't call, she texts me. And I can have it's great because I can keep up with mom and not really disrupt my work day. Like, I can just, you know, send her a message and then go back to what I'm doing, and it's awesome.
I've got my dad doing that now,
yeah,
too.
So dad would normally call, he's more of a guy that calls, but he's in Florida, so now it's a long distance thing. So he'll call maybe once a month and we'll chat or we'll FaceTime or something because they've got Wi-Fi in the house that they're renting. But but he will now email, and that's even less of an interruption because it's like a once a week sort of thing, unless something important happens. But still, like, it's not like an every day sort of thing. But the thing for me is just like when wintertime hits, I'm always scrambling for freelance stuff because it tends to slow down with the bigger contracts and then you tend to have to juggle a lot of little ones. But as a result, I get very busy and I get very focused. And then I'm just like, I haven't been outside or talked to a person in like 3 days maybe. And they're like, oh, no, wait. Like, I remember the mailman said come and sign for something. So I must have said hi to Lee at some point. But it's like, but it's such a short interaction. Like, you don't even really recall it. It's not really a conversation.
Yep.
You know, like, you can exchange pleasantries and your brain still doesn't really turn on.
Yep. I work in an office where literally my job, I don't have to talk to anybody unless I actually want to. So I can go 2 or 3 days without actually having to talk to anybody, even though
several
I go into the
office. Several thousand listeners just decided they want to do what you do. I'm totally kidding. We don't have 1,000 listeners. That's crazy.
you might be surprised.
Well, it's as long as I've been doing this show, and it's something when you get to the new year and you start planning ahead, and I throw out emails to people and reminding them of, you know, hey, the holidays are over and we're coming back into the show, and so here's the schedule for the next couple of months and stuff like that, and asking people to be on for that the end of the month where I've got to fill in some people that aren't regular, and I start looking ahead. The Siddle Cafe is on its way to hit episode 300 this year, which is really cool, considering that it's not been consistent every week since we started. Like, we take some time off in the summer for usually vacations, and then we take a Christmas break as well. Through and through, over the last few years, it's been weekly. You're trying to think about tracking and podcasting, and there's Patreon and all these kind of different things. I have a general idea because the software that I use on the website to post the show to the website into iTunes into one foul swoop is called Blueberry. And it sends me an email once a week to say, this is how many people downloaded the show. I'm assuming it's correct. I haven't touched that since I set it up in like 2014. So I have no real bearing, on whether or not, 2014, no, 2012. Wow. It's been a long time. So I don't know if that's working correctly. The idea behind it is that it doesn't matter whether someone listens to it on the website, whether they download it from a podcatcher, whether they listen to it on iTunes. The whole idea is that it tracks everything. And the numbers are usually around 160, 170. They've gone up a little bit, usually when we do like Game of Thrones or, something that's kind of a little bit more focused, like Jedi, Star Wars stuff comes out, whatever. But it's always kind of, it rose to 100, 150 quite quickly, and then it's just kind of stayed there, which is cool. Cause it's not dropping. So that I always take that as a win. But I don't even know these days, like, what's the best way to track a podcast. It's been so long since I've even worried about the numbers. Like, when you first start a show, you're always curious, right?
We stopped paying attention to it completely with Zombies Eat My Podcast. We focused on it for like the first 2 years, 3 years. And then we finally just said, you know what? We just have fun doing this. If people want to listen, that's great. Otherwise, we're just going to keep doing it.
Well, and that's something that I remember saying to a crowd at HalCon last year. They were asking about, starting podcasts and things like that. And the general consensus across the room, like, some people that were doing it as a full-time job, obviously were very into the numbers because they're trying to quantify and, pitch to ad people and stuff like that. And my response was like, okay, well, I'm a lot smaller than these guys. But my take is like, I do it because it's fun. If it wasn't fun, I wouldn't show up to do it. And then I don't really care what happens on the other side. And I feel like the shows that I listen to
are like
that too, right? They don't necessarily care. I mean, there's a certain point if someone like, if it's the Frog Pants Network and someone like Scott is doing like his 15th show of the month and it's not doing well, you kind of have to think, all right, well, could I double down and put that time into a show that is doing well? And that I understand. You need the numbers to kind of make those decisions. But again, that's because it's profession, right? Like that's a huge part of his income. Whereas with me, there's a lovely set of people on Patreon that support the show and it covers a lot of the show costs, but it's not something that I, pay my rent with and like really depend on. So there's less of a analytics kind of behind it, which may not be the best approach from a business standpoint, but from a personal standpoint, I just love the fact that I can have a total shit week and show up to do Comics Coast to Coast or the Citadel Cafe, and without fail, on the other side of that hour, I'm in a much better mood than I was when I went in.
We have a Patreon, and we literally have like two Patreon people that donate to us, and our biggest one, he goes by the screen name Lonely Bob. Yes, Lonely Bob, I'm talking about you. Lonely Bob listens to everything we do, and he donates about $5 a month, and he basically pays for us to have a server, and awesome. And basically pays for us to pick up a game once or twice a year. And he, believe it or not, Lonely Bob listens to us in Japan.
That's incredible.
Which is fun, because when we've had to do giveaways, Lonely Bob always wins. Or he wins about 50% of the time when we do giveaways, and we have to figure out a way to ship him something in Japan.
That's incredible. Oh, no. I never thought about giveaways when you've only got a couple of patrons. That's hilarious. Oh, man. I feel like there should be a bunch of Lonely Bob stuff, like just Lonely Bob t-shirts, like just create Lonely Bob merchandise for the pure sake of it. Print on demand stuff. Like, don't invest in a box of t-shirts, but, like, you know, like, have, you know, there's a, well, you've watched Longmire.
Yep.
Bob, the local town drunk, was a prominent kind of side character in that show. And the way that Walt Longmire says Bob to me,
yep,
it was so familiar. Like, he grew up with them, sort of thing.
Yep.
I feel like you should have just Lonely Bob. You know, you could have everything. You could have the Lonely Bob section of your website and have it be nothing other than just like a picture of Lonely Bob.
You know? Oh, he's got his own website, and I believe he does some kind of IT and Linux stuff in Japan. So the fact that I'm probably talking about him, he's probably going to listen to this and be like, yep,
that's Lou awesome.
Is talking about me. So
cool. Well, shout out to Lonely Bob. And while we're talking about longtime patrons and longtime fans of the show, I'll give a shout out to Growly Bear, who is in Singapore. So also other side of the world, listening to the podcast, which is really cool. And something that, because we haven't done the show live in a long time, I don't forget, but I have not had the same level of interaction with the show regulars that we used to see in the chat room every week. I am working on a plan to get that back, but it's been a long time coming. But in the Discord, however, you know, I'll see regulars like, you know, Adam Christensen and from Maccast and my friend Steven and some other people. You're obviously yourself and the other, you know, co-hosts and stuff. But it's, you know, like when you really kind of back up and take a break, like Christmas, you know, you can relax and listen to your own favorite podcasts and be like, wow, like this is produced in Helsinki, and it's got a guy from France and a guy from South Africa, and then like you have all these different things that are happening. You're just like, this is a kind of a crazy world that we live in. When you take a breath, you know, you can sit back, you can turn on the Netflix fireplace and listen to a podcast and not do anything else. Like, I'm not doing dishes and listening to a podcast. I'm not working and listening. I'm literally sitting and looking out my window, you know, and just listening. And your mind starts to wander, but like these things can be made anywhere and they can reach anybody. And so if you're out there listening and you're wondering like, hey, should I start a podcast and how do I do it and all that kind of stuff? Absolutely. Give it a go. Why not? You never know what spaghetti noodles are going to stick to the wall.
I would say I've done at this point now, not this and Zamp are the two that I've done the longest, but I have now done probably 5 shows or 6 shows over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And Zamp has stayed, and I've been a guest on here regularly for a long time. Yeah, you never know what's going
to
stick.
No, exactly. Exactly. I'm trying to remember. I think I've only ever been on 3 as a host. And so Dating Digital Podcast went away a long time ago, but then the Sigil Cafe and Comics Coast to Coast have continued. I've guested on others, and I've done some one-offs and stuff like that, but nothing. Oh, no, that's a lie. I did a short series with Garrett once upon a time called For the Win Radio, and it never took off. But those are the kind of things, like, I feel like if you don't get past 10 episodes, do you really call that a series of podcasts? Like, it never really found its legs. I think the Sigil Cafe, it's just a pure just force of will. Like, it's just fun to talk about stuff that I either like or lately things I don't like. It's kind of fun to rant.
Sometimes it's nice to just get that stuff off your chest.
Yeah. So speaking of, we'll keep this super, super short, but I am curious. Did you see The Last Jedi?
I have not.
You haven't? Oh, wow. Okay. Well, then this is going to be a really short conversation.
I know pretty much everything that has happened. I know almost the whole plot at this point, but I have not made the effort. My wife is not a Star Wars fan. She'll watch it when it comes out on DVD. But as for going to the theater to see it, she really doesn't have an interest. Wow. She hates the crowds, and she thinks that the Star Wars nerds cheering and crying as things happen on the screen annoy her.
Yeah.
So she didn't want to go. I had the flu while all of that was going on, and it came out. And my best friend went without me, and his brother went without me, and basically everybody went without me. And so my option was to go by myself or wait. And I said, I'm just going to wait.
Yeah.
I already know everything that's going to happen. I'll just wait for it to come out. Yeah, it won't be long.
I'm curious. Like, well, when you do see it, let me know. Because I'm quite curious to see what you think. Especially because you know everything. Like, there'd be no avoiding spoilers at this point. Okay. Well, I was curious to see what your thoughts might be. But, the reason why I bring it up, because I want to point back to last episode when I talked about it with Ryan, and I plugged that episode a couple times over the Christmas break. One, because we didn't have a new show, but two, I'm really happy with that conversation. I have seen so much vitriol and so much division on The Last Jedi over the holidays with all the posts and different opinions and YouTube videos and things. And there's a few people out there that have it, in my opinion, right, where they're like, you know, did it ruin Star Wars? No. Is it a great movie? Also, no. And I feel less guilty about not liking it now that there's been more. I found other people that are in my camp, which is not to say that not the pitchfork camp, because that's just going too far. But I really feel like Ryan and I had a balanced conversation. Like, we both were like, yeah, no, that wasn't great. Like, there's that moment where he's like, no, now that I think about it, that was really dumb. And I feel like it was really eye-opening too. Not just for The Last Jedi, but there's some dumb stuff in other Star Wars movies that you kind of forgive, you know, and you forget that you forgive, you know?
I recently, as of like this week, rewatched Rogue One, which I had not seen since it first came out. And again, my wife is not a Star Wars fan, so she hadn't seen it yet. I saw it without her. And so we watched that while we were eating dinner over like two nights. And she liked it a lot, but she was like, but everybody dies. So, well, they wrote those characters out. And I was like, yep. And I enjoyed it much more the second time, but I still don't think it's a great movie.
It's not necessarily my favorite.
I like what it did, and I don't dislike the movie. Like, if I'm bored and I'm looking for something to watch, I'll definitely probably throw it on again. But I don't know. I liked Force Awakens, but I've watched it like six or seven times now, and the more I watch it, the less I like it.
So I had the opposite experience, and we'll wrap this up, because I'm sure every podcast out there has just talked Star Wars to death. But I think my issue with Rogue One is not that it's a bad film. I think it's a good movie. The problem is that it's not a feel-good movie.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you walk out of Avengers and you're like, yeah, that was amazing. Or if you walk out of, you know, The Force Awakens and everybody's really excited because Star Wars is back. But with Rogue One, you're like, well, it's kind of a downer.
Yeah.
It's got some cool moments, but, like, it's not, it doesn't have that heroic uplift that a lot of these kind of movies have.
And let's use this as an example. Even Empire, which ends on a really down note.
Yes.
You still leave that theater being like, yeah, but the heroes did still kind of win. And it wasn't a total loss. And, you know, and I just feel like the last couple of Star Wars movies I've seen, it's been like, yeah, kick a ball down. Oh, yeah.
Great. No, and something that I did, because I was as torn as I was about The Last Jedi, I was itching for more Star Wars. So I saw that The Force Awakens was on Netflix, and I thought, okay, wait a minute. I just finished criticizing, you know, The Last Jedi for not tying into The Force Awakens very well. I should just go ahead and watch The Force Awakens again. And I did. And there are some parts in it that were weaker.
Yeah.
And they still bothered me. But, and I remember criticizing that film for being, you know, a little bit of a rehash of New Hope, etc. But it is a far better movie.
I'm sure it is.
The Last Jedi. Like, it. Forget the whole Star Wars theme of it all and just go by storytelling, character development, plot, pacing, all of it. It is a ride. From the moment it starts to rev up, it just never stops. And it's a much, much better film. And by watching it so close to The Last Jedi, which I've seen twice now, by the way, you really start to see the deviations in not fan, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Not fan service, but all the things that were very carefully set up in The Force Awakens. There's a lot of stuff in The Last Jedi where they just sweep it under the rug. Like, I watched a YouTube video recently. It has a lot of opinions. It's very clearly just someone's two cents. But one thing that they used as an example, which I thought was very poignant, was, have you ever played that game either in a social setting, or for me it was in film school and in animation school? The game is called Yes And. The idea being that someone comes up with a silly idea of a cartoon character doing something stupid, and you have to accept it. You have to accept that they have decided to play hockey with a pool noodle in July. And
yeah,
but then what happens? Like, that is the reality, and you have to move forward from that point. There is always some dipshit that wanted to be a smartass and just doesn't want to play and just pushes up their nerd glasses and just flips the whole thing around after like four people have worked really hard and imaginatively to create something unique. And that's what I feel what happened in The Last Jedi is that someone gave Rian Johnson a sandbox and he goes, I don't like it, and just flipped it over. And you're just like, what? The whole audience is like, what just happened? You know?
Yeah.
And I don't remember the name of the YouTuber. It was something that I saw that I think I retweeted. It's on my Twitter feed. But it was bang on. Now, not everything in the video was kind of like a shared opinion, but that one thing was like, that is a very, very good way of explaining why everybody is so miffed about this movie. And it's not the one scene that people think is dumb. That's not what ruined it. It's this underlying general disregard for all the work that went into the relaunch of Star Wars with episode 7. And so I'm curious, for the people that are out there that have that opinion of The Last Jedi, go back and watch The Force Awakens and let me know what you think, because I'm curious as to whether people will really see that juxtaposition of table flipping that happens from one movie to the next. But anyway, we can't go down this path because we will be on it for the rest of the show. Something that I do want to touch on, and it'll be brief because it's something that I have watched and I will warn everybody not to. Have you seen The Circle?
I have not, but I have heard nothing but bad things.
It is total shite. I was really surprised. Because I'm a Tom Hanks fan, and I thought, okay, straight up from the trailer, you get the impression he's probably the bad guy. Or if he's not the bad guy, he's probably like, I don't know, just not necessarily, he's not the hero of the story. You know that from the way that the trailers paint the whole situation.
Right.
But he's a good actor, so I thought, ooh, I don't know if I've ever seen Tom Hanks as a bad guy, so I'll watch this. And, you know, Emma Watson's good, and what's his face there from, I'm blanking on the guy's name, John Boyega from Star Wars, who's barely in it, by the way. He's in it for like 10 minutes of screen time total. It's ridiculous that he's even in the trailer. Like, it's dumb.
Right.
So the whole idea is this girl played by Emma Watts, her name's May, she gets a job at The Circle, big Silicon tech company. It's giant, freaking enormous. And there's all these shots off the bow of Apple, Facebook, Google, Silicon Valley, you know, tech startup, you know, culture. And it's eye-rolling to the point where it's probably true. Like, I mean, obviously they exaggerate a lot of stuff, but the message that they're sending is pretty clear. And they paint this May girl as someone that really needs a job and is really happy to be working at a great company, but also, you know, rolls her eyes at like the social construct of it all, right? Mm-hmm. And you thought, okay, that's really interesting. There's this inner conflict in this character. Eventually, she becomes sort of like endeared through a near-death experience to the to Tom Hanks, the guy that runs the company. He plays Bailey, this guy named Bailey. And her personality just evaporates. Like, the it's nothing against Emma Watson. Like, all of the acting in this movie is on par because they're all talented people. But it's one of those things where, like, the character motivation just evaporates in Act Two. And you're just like,
right,
what is everybody doing? And it ends, spoilers, by the way, not that you shouldn't worry about spoilers because you shouldn't watch the movie. It ends with May getting into the personal email of Tom Hanks and another comedian. I'm trying to, but he's not Bill Paxton. Gosh, I'm looking through IMDb now, and his name is so far down the list that he's not even on IMDb. This is the second in command, the other guy that's in the movie. Anyway, I'll remember it later. She gets a hold of their emails, their corporate emails, and releases it to the world and saves the day. You don't know how. You don't know how she and John Boyega became these super geniuses. Patton Oswalt is the other actor, by the way. Yeah.
Okay. I was looking for a comedian on that list. So.
Yeah. And he's really good in it. Like, just everybody fits their roles when the roles are written well. But like these mad geniuses that created this massive tech startup, their response to May, you know, unearthing all this stuff is like, well, we're screwed. That's it. That's their entire effort. They look at one another and they say, we're borked, and that's it.
Which is funny because the movie makes it out like that's not the plot. It makes it look like it's the firm and they're going to get him and they're going to get her and they're going to ruin her life. And,
yeah, exactly. And it's like,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. What you expect, and this is, you know, pop culture in Hollywood and Tom Hanks in this kind of role. You expect Tom Hanks to have the Ian McKellen role from Da Vinci Code, right? You expect him to be the mentor that is really the evil genius and have it just be this whoa moment of like, that was brilliant in a way that like a movie that you can't watch again because the hook and the reveal was just so amazing that you're like, oh, I just have to show it to other people. Like, I get it now, but it's not. It's utter shite. it's absolutely terrible.
It is supposedly based on a book, and what I hear is it's about 50% of the book because the book is so complicated they couldn't explain it all in a movie.
Yeah. Here's an idea, probably not a good book to adapt and put into Hollywood. Anyway, so that's my rant on the I don't like The Circle. So it's been a long time since I've had a movie where I just kind of like pop it right up here and say, don't see it. Just don't. That's my do not Netflix pick right now. Are you watching anything these days or spending your time doing anything fun and interesting?
I've been playing a lot of board games once I got over being sick at Christmas time. I got a bunch of board games for Christmas and my friends got a bunch of board games. So I've been doing a lot of board game playing, which is unusual.
In a cool way, though, like in a land of video games and everything is at your fingertips on your phone sort of deal, like playing. I mean, and board games are back. Like, I know that they're kind of a cool thing right now, but I don't talk about them very much.
Well, I had a gift card for a board game store because there is a local one that someone gave me a gift card for. So I picked up a game called Ex Libris. Mostly because my wife loves books, and the game revolved around books, and I knew it was a surefire way to get her to play a game with me. But the idea is it's in a fantasy world. Think Harry Potter.
Okay.
And the idea is that every town or city has, like, a head librarian who is the master of all the books. And you're each a librarian competing to be the head librarian in a fantasy city. And everybody gets 6 cards to start the game. The cards have, they have random books in alphabetical order on each card. And there's six different types of books. Like, there's books on monsters. There's books on the history. There's books on magic. There's books on, like, math. Like, each one, there's six, they're color-coded. There's black, green, pink, red, and yellow. And each one corresponds to a different thing. And, like, the technical books is, like, how to use your sword to kill trolls. And everything is a pun. Every book is a pun on each card. But each card is a section of the alphabet, like A, and then it will say there are 10 A cards. So they number them, A1 through 10. You've got what's A3. The idea is you're supposed to put together a library with your cards, and when you get to a certain point, it triggers the end of the game. But you have to alphabetize them the best you can and continue to build a deck and a library in front of you. And you can only go three, stack them in front of you three high. Like, you lay them down in front of you, so like you're playing like regular cards.
Right.
But you can go three high, and you can go in any direction you want, but they have to be in alphabetical order. And you can't shift them once they're in play. But there are different libraries. You have three gnomes, and every turn begins with you placing a gnome on one of the various other libraries or shops in the game. And you unlock more as the game goes on. And there is the shop that lets you draw five more cards. There's the shop that lets you do this, and it lets you play two more cards down into your in what's called your stack.
Right.
And then there's various things. And then each one of you is a different library itself, and you get different abilities. Like, some of the libraries have, you can put multiple gnomes down on that stack. Well, there's the ice library where you get a snowman. And if you use your snowman figure instead of one of your gnomes, nobody else can put anything there because it's too cold. There's another one that is the trash golem. And he rummages through all the discarded cards, and you get extra cards every turn because he's stealing from everybody's discard piles.
And
the game unfolds really quickly. It's like 10 rounds and the game's over.
Right.
And you get about three plays per turn.
Right.
I mean, per round. And it is a lot of fun.
It's funny because it sounds, on the surface, you're like, okay, not the most exciting kind of objective, but then when you start putting like gnomes and golems and thieving, and like when you start to layer in the color, you know, the character of the game, that's where it becomes fun, right?
Yeah, and you start out, you can play on your library, your gnomes, and that means you can draw a card or place a card on the table. But you start out with two extra libraries or stores at the beginning of the game, and then one of them goes away and you keep whatever one is the lowest number. And you go through the whole stack. And if you go through the whole stack of stores, you start over again. So the ones that are kept stay, and you go back through the stack and they'll come back through again.
Hmm.
So
what's the objective? Like, how do you win?
You win the game. Think of it like Scrabble. At the end of the game, everybody goes through and you count each of each book type. And you count how many cards you played, and there's other totals. Like, you're each given a card at the beginning of the game, and that means if you have more of those books, you get extra points.
Right, but then I don't know what books you're collecting. And your advantage is like, okay, well, if I get all of these kinds of books, I'm going to have more points than people realize.
Yes. The game also begins because there is a book that each town likes. So you get that card is revealed at the beginning of the game. So you know that if you're the guy who has the most green books, you get an extra 15 points at the end of the game. So you want all the green books.
Right.
Or you want all the black books because they're the ones that are the bonus this round. It's random. Then there's also the penalized books. Like, you don't want blue. Any blue book you have on your shelf, you're minus a point.
Okay.
And so it's like a math game. You're looking at it and you're going, no, if I play this card, it looks like I should get 3 points, but I'm only going to get one because there's two books on each shelf. And every card has between 2 to 4 books on it. And it's random. Like the cards, there's no rhyme or reason to the card. It may be like card N7/8 has all monster books. Well, if that's the card that if monster books are the bad books, you're never going to play that card because it's just going to minus your points. Yeah.
Now, do these good books and bad books change every game?
Depending on your hand.
Oh, okay.
Like the cards themselves are all the same, but you never know what you're going to get. You never know what they're going to be. And the books that are on them, it's like there's no rhyme or reason to what's on each card.
Right.
So it's really, really random. I've played about a dozen games of it now, and every game is played completely different.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, it's a sign of a good game that, you know, you get replayability and things like that. I mean, that's something that I really like about Munchkin. I mean, the cards don't change. You can change the version of the game that you have
right.
to add some flavor. But really, the cool part about that game is that you get to mess with other people so that you really don't know what monster is going to come up. You don't know what, you know, your advantage is this, you know, this round. And then you just don't know who's going to build up their deck and try to mess with you. Is it a personality thing where they're not going to mess with you, or are they likely to help you? And I find that kind of, because then it's just never dull, right? As much as I like something like Catan, I really find it kind of a dull game now. Like Catan
yes.
is Catan to me is the Monopoly of, you know, 2000s.
I've never been able to get into Catan at all.
I mean, part of my issue is that I've only ever played with really the same half dozen people. So
yeah.
You kind of know what their strategies are, and it doesn't really. He's like, well, I'm not going to bother to bargain with anybody because no one ever bargains at this table. So like, well, that's just now we're just drawing cards until someone wins. So that's not very fun. So I like games that have a little bit more flavor. I don't know if I've told you this. The first Kickstarter board game that I backed was this year.
Really?
Early Christmas present. Yeah, I picked up what was it called? Unstable Unicorns.
Oh, okay.
Was the name of it?
I've heard of that.
Yeah. And they did like something crazy, like 2.something million on Kickstarter. I mean, it's bananas. I'm in like the fourth shipping round in February is when I'm supposed to get it. Which I thought, it's fine. It's a great time of year to get a new board game because it's the dead of winter. Like nothing is happening.
Right.
I have no idea. Other than just watching the Kickstarter video, I was like, the cards are fun. Everything is a unicorn theme. It seems like it's pretty accessible for everybody. Looks like something that people could pick up. Like I could sit down with my folks and my sister and like everybody would kind of pick it up quickly.
That was one of the reasons why we picked up this Ex Libris game is it looked like it's family friendly. We have been since the holidays, we've been having a lot of people over. So we figured it was something to give us some variety that's not Cards Against Humanity.
Oh yeah.
At this point, I can't play Cards Against Humanity anymore.
Yeah.
I don't laugh anymore, and I don't find it fun.
No. Those kind of games are only good. Like, it's shock humor. Like, it's only good the first, little while. I mean, the one thing that I do find with Cards Against Humanity, if you have not played in a while, then you don't remember the cards. And if you're playing with a very smart group of people, it can be extraordinarily fun. I also find it's more fun in like a big group of like 10, because then you don't go through all the cards. Like you just with 10 people, like you barely go around the circle twice in a couple of hours because everybody's just laughing to kill themselves, right? But something that I wish that I had more time to do, and I wish that I had more friends that were into it that weren't already tied up in a game, is Dungeons and Dragons. I'd like to play some D&D. And I don't want to do online. Like I have friends I know I could connect with, but I would much rather find somebody in town.
I've been playing another game I got at Christmas as a Christmas gift. That's Dungeons and Dragons themed, but not necessarily Dungeons and Dragons itself.
Okay.
I've been playing Betrayal at Baldur's Gate.
So I've heard about Baldur's Gate.
Okay, Baldur's Gate is a city in one of the Dungeons & Dragons worlds.
Okay.
And it's famous for being, like, the city that all adventures kind of begin in. It's the city that, like, everything is bad, and it's just like the all adventures seem to always start in Baldur's Gate. There's a series of video games that all start in Baldur's Gate. There's a famous inn that like is mentioned in all kinds of fantasy novels, and it's a city in it's a bar in Baldur's Gate.
So it's like Bree from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Yeah. And a game came out just before Christmas called Betrayal at Baldur's Gate. And the idea is you start out in the famous bar and you're each a random hero. There's six heroes to choose from, and there's two different variants of each hero. There's like a dwarf, there's the warrior, or you can be a paladin. There's an orc that could be a ranger, or he can be the warrior. There's the elf that can be the wizard, or he can be the druid. There's a bunch of variety. But anyway, the idea is you start out in the bar, and the city of Baldur's Gate has been cursed by the ancient god of Baal. And now shadows and things are creaking the night, and everybody's inside hiding. And adventurers have come to Baldur's Gate to rescue the city. And you start out at the inn, and you reveal floor tiles, which it's literally just a stack of cardboard tiles. And there's tiles that are buildings, there's tiles that are the sewer, and there's tiles that are the streets. And depending on what color doorway there are, you place the corresponding tile and flip it over, and you reveal the next location. And you, as your adventurers, take turns working together, wandering the streets, looking for clues on how to stop Baal. And every tile has an item, what's called an event, which will be like something spooky happened. Roll a die. If you get a certain number on the die, something good happens. If not, something bad happens. Move your stats like you have madness, intelligence, strength, and speed. And you adjust them variously by the events and the items you pick up in the game. And the idea is you want to wander the streets, find as many items as you can, get as strong as you can. And then every few tiles, somebody reveals what's called like the relic. And when the relic is revealed, the player who finds it rolls a die. And if they roll above the amount of relics that have been drawn in the game, it triggers the event. And at that point, it is one of you is the bad guy, and you're betraying the rest of the party.
Okay.
And there's a book, and you look at what item it was and what room it was found in, and then it tells you who is the bad guy. So just because you revealed the bad guy doesn't mean you're the bad guy.
Right.
It might be the player to your left is the bad guy.
Right.
And so, or the player who has such and such an item is the bad guy, or the player who has the highest intelligence is the bad guy, or the lowest intelligence. And at that point you look at a book and it tells you what the scenario is. I played the other day and the scenario was we were all dropped into the sewer and the sewer became a labyrinth, and you resorted all the sewer tiles so that it was set out like a labyrinth. And the goal was for us to get from point A to point B and get this key before the Minotaur kills us.
Hmm.
And the one player, who is always the winner, decided he gets to rearrange the labyrinth the way he wants. He made it a straight line, so he could literally just kill us. He was like, oh, if I make it a straight line, I have a charge attack that will run the length of a corridor. So you're all going to die. And nice. We're like, this isn't fun.
So he was the kid in the Yes And game that fits the sandbox.
Yes.
Yeah. There's always one. There's always one.
My friend Colin is always that guy. And whatever scenario you're going to play, if you have to pick a side, you always want to be on Colin's side because Colin always figures out the way to win. Mm-hmm. We play a bunch of board games and Colin is, I'd say 80% of the time, the winner. And so this game, he ended up winning because he just killed us in like two turns.
Oh. But that kind of stuff is sometimes anticlimactic. Like, I mean, I've had that happen in a D&D campaign too, where like, you take all this time and you build up this like giant dragonkin character and you get this huge, you know, hammer that you swing around and it's like, yeah, okay, Joel, it's up to you. Like, everybody is, you know, two are out of range, or you happen to be next to this big thing that just kind of came in to kill us, and you take this giant swing with your hammer and you basically miss, and you're like,
yeah,
I'm a foot away. Like, how? It's like, well, the dice says that you missed. It's like, well, that's just, wow. Everybody's looking at you like, you're an idiot. It's like, I don't know.
He's right.
Like, but the build up to that moment was like, oh, this is, if you roll the right number, then you're just like, oh, so you just completely crush the bad guy's skull and you win. Yes. You know, which would have been how the movie goes.
Right. And then this time you just, you botched the roll and guess what? Yeah. You're the one that's dead this time.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But after all and that build up, that's kind of anticlimactic.
And that's the way this game goes. And not all of the scenarios is there a villain. Most of them there is. One player is the villain. But we played the other night, too, and there was another one where basically the board got rearranged and there were basically pieces put on the board that were out to get us. And they had a set of rules. And we ended up having to play against the board, trying to find stuff on the board to win. And it was interesting, and it's different every time. There's about 25 to 30 scenarios in the book. And you never know which one you're going to get.
That's really cool. It's really cool.
And they're supposedly already working on an expansion to the game that will add more floor tiles and more adventures.
It sounds like you've got some really accessible games, too. Like, you know, you wouldn't have to be necessarily familiar with Dungeons & Dragons to play that one.
You wouldn't, but if you were, the game definitely, you get a kick out of the game a little bit more.
Yeah.
But you don't have to be.
Yeah, kind of the cheeky grins, you know, sideways and stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of goblins and trolls and monsters and stuff, that brings me into the other thing that I wanted to talk about this week. Over the holidays, I was actually able to watch Trollhunters Season 2. Now, I know that you've started this. How far did you get?
I've only seen like the first one or two episodes.
Okay.
They didn't wow us. So that's why we haven't kind of jumped feet first in.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll say stick with it, but just buckle up because it's going to take a while for things to really kind of get moving.
Yeah.
So I'll stay spoiler free, even though I know you don't care about it. It has only been out for a couple weeks. I even found some fan art online that kind of didn't really spoil anything for me, but just little moments that would have been nice to have happened for me in watching it as opposed to seeing fan art and stuff like that. So I'll stay clean as far as the spoiler goes. The one thing that I'll say as far as a recommendation is that it is absolutely worth watching. It's only 13 episodes. It's good. But it's got a weak start. And I mean weak for like the first half of the season is pretty meh. So it does make it really hard to get into. However, the last half of the season, like I found myself watching three in a row just because it got to a point where the plot was like, you want to know what happens next because they're writing two and three episodes at a time.
Right.
And one of my favorite treats, and it was something that was recommended from my friend Steven, because he watches it with his sons, and they're like 11 and 13, I think. So, like, they're the right age for this show. Because they'll get all the humor. Like, not just the kiddie jokes, but, the more advanced humor would be something that they would get to. And there's a couple of episodes right in the middle. I want to say it's episode 7, 8, give or take. But they take place at the same time, but you get to see different characters' perspectives from one episode to the other.
Mm-hmm.
But you get to see the overlaps happening in the first one, and it is the weirdest shit. It's just like, what on earth is... And like, you have enough time to see, like, and be confused by what just happened, and they don't explain anything. And then when you watch the next episode, you're like, oh, okay, we're going to find out what all that craziness was. And it is... wonderful. It's really, really fun. And from that point on, it goes right back to season one, Trollhunter. The stuff that you really enjoyed about season one, it rolls right back into itself. And I was trying to, for the life of me, figure out why. It's just the writing. It's not like the animation or the voice acting or anything like that. It is purely the writing.
A part of me also feels like they may have had to redo stuff maybe in the writing and were limited by the fact that they couldn't get certain cast members to come back and do voice acting again.
Yeah, there is that. Anton Yelkin, of course, has unfortunately passed away since he did the voice recording for Jake. I want to say Jake.
Yeah.
Jim Lake.
Jim. I knew it was with a J.
I smashed them together. I smashed Jim and Lake together for Jake. But no, it's Jim Lake Jr. is his name. So yeah, you're right. I mean, it's unfortunate that they couldn't rewrite there, but there's things that they could have done, I think, to improve those episodes without dealing with his dialogue, because mostly it's stuff that they could have left out, I think, or it's stuff surrounding other characters. My biggest problem, which you might have the feeling for already, the big bad in the game, or not in the game, in the show, is starts with a G. I'm trying to remember his name. Not Vendel. That's it. He's a good guy. But he's oh gosh, he's the Clancy Brown does his voice.
The Gunmar?
Gunmar is his name. Yeah. So his son was the big bad in season one.
Right.
And so Gunmar is the big bad in season two. But for a big bad, he really doesn't do anything. He keeps on trying to do other things when physically he looks like he should be able to do it all. And so it's this weird kind of like, he's like the emperor, but with no Vader, you know, like, whereas his son, they definitely had that like dark underlord. And then the big muscle, the Vader, was out front. Right. And mm-hmm. And I feel like they really needed to add more, I guess, not fear, but weight to him as a villain. And again, like, that doesn't really pick up for a long time. So it's hard to get into it when you're like, well, Jim is, he feels like he's in peril, but like, I'm not really that scared for him, because every time this big bad guy, which gets within literally a fist's distance, he just stops. And it's just like, what? I don't understand why you haven't beaten the snot out of this kid yet, because you clearly want to. And there's not, like, he's probably 8 times the kid's size. And there's no rhyme or reason. Like, it just, he stops because the script says we can't have this fight yet. You know, like, it.
Right.
And that kind of stuff was bothersome. But I went through and I was thinking about the first half. And basically what it seems like to me is there's a lot of stuff that happened in season one that was great. And I think the powers that be said, do more of that. And the problem is that tips the balance from being a really cool action cartoon with some smart humor to being Joke City. It goes from being Guardians of the Galaxy to Guardians of the Galaxy 2, where everything is a raised eyebrow or a joke that is just beaten over your head. And
which doesn't make it awful. It just doesn't make it as good.
No, exactly. Right. You're like, I don't hate it, but I was like, why is this not? I remember loving season one. Why am I not gripped by this? So when I was looking things up on Wikipedia, sure enough, by the time you get to the second half of the season, Dan and Kevin Hageman are the only writers in the show, and they just pair up and they just bang, 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 bang. And that is like the second half of the season. I lost count with the number of writers, screenwriters, and other like people that were involved in writing the episodes in the first half of the season. Now, Dan and Kevin are always in there, but they've got another 6 people around them. And I think it's probably all the best intentions, but too many spoons in the pot.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's like, no, the show needs director, and the show needs producer, and it needs these 2 guys writing it. And like, for whatever reason, the magic that those guys come up with, it really, really is fantastic, to the point where, again, spoiler free, there are some moments in the last 3 episodes that are like cinematic. Like, it's Pixar movie moments where you're not tearing up, but you're in there, you're invested, you're not cheering, but like, you really are wondering what's going to happen next. And when things go good or bad or whatever, you are invested. And that kind of stuff happens in the ones that Dan and Kevin write. I say that like I'm on a first name basis with them, but like, just, you know, you really kind of understand how the season changes. So I definitely suggest sticking with it. Unfortunately, you're just going to have to get through to like episode 6 or 7, and then things are really going to start to wheel forward.
It's good to know that, because that first episode, Erica really loved the show. Mm-hmm. And we watched the first episode and she was like, it's almost bedtime. We could do another episode or we could go to bed. And we both looked at it and went, let's go to bed.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's how I felt too. Like, you get to the end of the 22 minutes, just like, do you want to watch another one? Nah, not really, not right now. But then, you know, later on, you're just like, oh, yeah, I got another 20 minutes. which is nice.
Something I will tell you that's worth watching, I won't go too much into details, but if you haven't been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., this season is amazing.
Really? I am so, like, not in a bad way. It's just one of those shows where, like, I don't have time for it. It's good, but it's not like...
The season three was really bad. Well, I won't say really bad. It has its ups and it has its downs. and like, there's moments where you're like, oh, this show's really awesome. It's that garbage. And then season four last season was actually, it was good overall. And I really enjoyed probably 80% of it. There was a couple episodes where I was just like, okay, let's wrap this up and move on to the next plot point. This season, I won't spoil too much, but the season ends with them being captured by what you think is a government agency, and it shows them in outer space. And you're like, wait, what? Why are they in space? And right off the bat, you find out the beginning of the season, whoever kidnapped them sent them 70 years in the future.
Wow.
And they're on a space station being run by the Kree. And Earth has been destroyed, and they're trying to figure out why.
So last season?
No, it literally, some point in the 70-year period, the Earth got destroyed.
Wow.
And everybody is stuck in this space station, and the Kree are, like, making Inhumans as slaves and stuff.
Wow.
And it's like, whoa, this is freaky, and... Every episode, you kind of don't know what's going to happen.
That's cool when you get into like the fifth season of these kind of shows. Like it's nice that they've got something that's going to kind of keep it twisting and turning. I followed Chloe Bennett on Instagram when the show first came out and have always enjoyed her feeds. And I still see her stuff, and she's doing a lot of promo and things,
yeah.
Golden Globes or whatever, lately for the show. And the cast seems like they have an absolute blast making it. Like Clark Gregg and Chloe are just, they're complete heels. Like they're so funny to watch in interviews and things like that. And I'll recommend, actually, if you don't, to anybody out there, regardless of whether you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., follow Chloe Bennett on Instagram. She is hilarious.
In all honesty, she's actually a highlight. She's not my favorite character, but her role in like the last season and this one, she has definitely become a better character.
Mm.
They have made her less of the whining about why is it me, and more of the no, I know I'm not the villain, so stop pointing guns at me. Kind of thing. And you're like,
nice.
So again, I won't go too much into detail, and I won't bore you with details, but if you haven't been watching it, the last two seasons have been really good.
Yeah. I'll have to find a way to watch it. I
know their ratings are down, but there's definitely a reason why the show keeps getting renewed.
Hmm.
I don't think Disney and ABC care about the show's ratings as long as there are people that are watching.
Yeah.
Every season kind of has a tie-in to whatever Marvel movie comes out. So.
Well, and I think that's the other thing, too, is that like they know they have a certain audience that's just going to watch anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, there is a rumor that the Earth may be destroyed by something that happened in the first season of the show. There was a character introduced in like the first four or five episodes that kind of just got thrown away. And there's a rumor that that character might be what destroyed the Earth.
Huh. I have seen the first couple of seasons. I'll have to see if I can remember who that is. But not off the top of my head, obviously, I don't, because it was 5 years ago. Because the first season I watched when it was actually on TV. Right on. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by you, dear listener. If you head on over to Patreon, it's one of the best ways that you can support the show. It's patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. If you want to become a patron, it's quite easy to do on the site there. I am working on some new tiers and some new goals for the Patreon. Things like patrons voting for show topics, an AMA with myself and maybe a co-host or something. I don't know whether we would do that as a podcast or whether we would do that as like a Discord kind of chat, because everybody that's a patron would be in there anyway.
Yeah.
So that's one way to do it. We're looking at some other things as well. So I'm trying to slowly push that out there. So if you are a patron already, and you get some update emails, don't fret. It's just me kind of like changing things. And I've got the feeling that Patreon is going to over-communicate and send you an email whenever I change stuff. So if that happens, I apologize. But I've discovered with some other friends that are using Patreon that whenever they make a change to the page, you can quite easily accidentally email everybody by without meaning to. So yay for the Patreon UI. But one of the things that I will say is that looking back over the last year, we actually, and just the other day, Patreon sent me like a year in summary. We've doubled the amount of patrons on the Siddle Cafe in 2017. So a tip of the hat to all the new folks. Thanks very much. I'm going to give a shout out to Amy, who's our newest patron. So thank you very much, Amy. And there's a number of other people that are in there, and I've already thanked them, you know, in the Discord and whatnot. But I really appreciate it. I think it's a fantastic way to podcast and to support podcasts. So look up patreon.com/thesiddlecafe. And hey, look up your other favorite podcasts while you're there. You might find some other people that you can toss a dollar to help their shows keep on going. And if you happen to be a Minecraft player, we do have a Minecraft server. I think a lot of us took a break over the Christmas holiday, but we have been playing on the Citadel, which is the Minecraft server for the show and the community around the Discord. And we have a lot of fun in there, too. I actually don't have a pick this week. It was basically just all about giving a shout out to Amy. So unless you've got something, then we can just call it a day.
If you haven't seen the new trailer for Black Panther, it looks even better. They put out a new trailer this week.
Oh, did they?
I haven't. Yeah.
It's one of those movies
It's 90 seconds, and there's a lot of action sequences that were not in previous trailers.
Cool. I'm quite happy with the trailers that I've seen. There was one in front of Star Wars. I'm okay with just going to see the movie. Like, I enjoyed, one of the things I enjoyed about Last Jedi was knowing so little about it. I think I might be okay with just going to see Black Panther. I mean, if it comes on or something like that as a pre-roll for one of my YouTube channels, I might watch it, but like, I'm not going to go. I think I might just skip seeking it out and go see the movie, because it is definitely on my to see list.
Yeah. They're saying it's going to be the highest pre-ordered Marvel movie thus far.
Wow. That's good. Because I mean, I mean, all the actors that I've seen that are in it, I've seen in other things, most of them, and they're all fantastic. And it looks like they've done it right. Like, it looks like they're doing everything right. All people can go off of it is the trailers, but I've heard some people that are big fans of the comics and fans of the characters and stuff like that saying that it looks like it's going to be really, really cool. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. You can find more information about the show, some of the links that we talked about at thecitadelcafe.com. You can email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Same thing on Twitter and Facebook, just the show name. Imagine that. For me, it's my name on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, wherever you want to pick your social media poison. I am probably posting pictures of pancakes and or coffee. Had a fun little chat with some followers this week. It's been quite amusing. and if you want to hire me, you can always go to joelduggan.com. Email me there. I do commissions. I do artwork and all kinds of stuff. So check that out. Lou, where can people find you online?
The easiest place to find me is just look up Busy Zombie Lord. I am pretty much Busy Zombie Lord on all social media. And you can also find my show at Zombies at My Podcast, wherever you find your podcasts.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, and I have lost my voice, but you can only pick two out of the four.